paper four for the folks in Radio Land.
Good morning. In agenda paper four, we report the result of our consultation with ISB and FASB members on the continuing employment issue. The issue is whether paragraph B55A of FRS 3 is conclusive in determining that payments that are contingent on the continuing employment of the selling shareholders are remuneration for post-combination services. We understand that the preliminary view of many ISB members is that the guidance in paragraph B55A should be indicative. Many ISB members think that the guidance should be clarified only if the FASB members are of a similar view, in order to maintain the convergence of IFRS 3 with US GAAP guidance. We understand that the FASB member prefer to weigh the conclusion of the post-implementation review of FASB statement 141 before undertaking any clarification projects. On the basis of the consultations with the ISB and FASB members, we recommend that the committee should not add this issue to its agenda for the moment, in order to not create divergence with US GAAP. We are asking the committee if they agree with our recommendation and if their comments on the proposed tentative agenda decision as shown in Appendix A of the paper. Thanks.
Comments? Laurence?
I agree that the issue should not be put on the agenda. I have consents with the wording of the rejection. The third paragraph, I'm confused about what it is saying and what is the message that is being spread out. I have the first two lines that say that the view of the ISB members is that IFRS 3 be amended such that the guidance in paragraph B55A should be indicative. And then we say committee is concerned that should not create divergence with US GAAP. What shall we take out of this? Are we stating implicitly a treatment or not? As for me, personally, okay, fine, and particularly since looking at how the FASB is moving, I'm not sure that there is so much this will at the ISB's level to keep tight as much as possible with US literature. So I'm confused about the messages that are being sent through this paragraph.
What we intend to communicate here is that as the words are currently read under either IFRS or US GAAP, that it is conclusive that when you have one of these factors, it is not indicative, but that the ISB members, when we spoke with them, were inclined to say they would prefer to see it amended to be indicative rather than conclusive, but that creating a divergence, because if we were to change IFRS and US GAAP was not to make similar changes, that would create divergence in gaps which are currently aligned. And there was a reluctance to do that, preference not to do it.
I did not read your view that this is saying that the words are conclusive today.
Andrew?
I have concerns with this because obviously the post-implementation review is some way off, and that's fine for thinking about how things might be amended. I think it should be crystal clear, and I thought that's where we were, where the existing standard is, because if you're not crystal clear where the existing standard is, open diversity on a major issue, and I don't think it was diversity to start with. If we're not clear, then it will make a problem. So I think,
you know, if we can be more definitive in the agenda decision on what the current standard says, and fair enough, if people on reflection think it should be changed, then that's another issue. But I think the wording at the moment is somewhat lacking in clarity.
Joanna? John?
I think I agree with the conclusion that we shouldn't do anything now. I do have some concerns about that for the very reason that we're talking about it, that it could open up diversity. I absolutely agree that I don't think the agenda decision portrays the issue, and even in the very first paragraph about the submitter, we don't actually say what the issue is. To me, it's in the first paragraph that we should be saying, because the issue was raised, because the introduction says these are the options, and the words in whatever the actual paragraph is say you must do this. So that actually setting the scene, because I don't think the agenda decision has set the scene. And I also think that the paragraph that says many of the ISB members, blah, 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 A, I would question whether we are entitled to say that. That was an informal discussion, and I just think it is totally inappropriate that we as the Interpretations Committee should be saying that. And is that actually saying to the world that, ISB members think this, therefore this is what we should be doing? I just think it should be said that, yes, there is confusion. Yes, we don't want to do anything, and I agree with Andrew that we should probably say that at the moment, if you actually read the standard, it's unequivocal. It says, you must do it. End of story.
But
maybe we need to make that decision. But I certainly don't think that we can say that third paragraph. We could say we're not going to take it on because by doing anything we might create something divergence with US GAAP. But I certainly don't think we can say certain ISB members that we caught in the loo made these comments to us.
John?
Yeah, I mean, similar comments. I think that the third paragraph is a statement of preferences rather than a statement of what is the state today. And also the fourth paragraph comments on the views of the FASB members, which I think is probably inappropriate in an agenda decision from this committee. I mean, I think that the rejection notice that should actually make the statement of what the committee believes is the current state, which I believe it is conclusive. That's my view, but maybe that should be debated, but I think statements of preference have the potential to actually make people believe that they somehow have some bearing on the current interpretation of the standard.
Some board members have raised that point as well. John?
Well, I was just going to echo what just has been said. In certain part of the world, as a minimum, there is no divergence of practice, and concern would be that this would create divergence of practice. So we should be careful in avoiding that.
I propose that we delete the second, third, and fourth paragraphs from the agenda rejection. I have to say, I apologize to the staff for not raising that earlier, but some comments that board members made to me yesterday got me thinking. And the old brain doesn't work as fast as it used to, maybe. That means, obviously, that we need to completely rewrite our basis. I've seen a couple of suggestions for rationales. Let me ask this. Can we bring back a revised rejection notice tomorrow? And may I ask, I think it has to focus on our desire not to create diversity and our recognition that there is a post-issuance review coming up very soon. But I'm open to other suggestions. Bert and then Joanna.
Well, if we think that there is no divergence, then why shouldn't we put this into the rejection note? Because that's usually something that we say. We don't think that there's divergence, and that's why we don't put it on our agenda. So shouldn't we say that? Because I heard around the table that many people think there is no divergence in this issue right now.
I don't think we can say there's none. We could maybe say there is limited, but in the original papers we had an example of a company that had presented and analysed the standard one way and then restated the following year for something different.
Yeah. Joanna?
I guess it was a similar thing that you know, to me it is conclusive, and I think that to a lot of people it's conclusive and there is no divergence. But if you bring something back that says that, because I know Laurence disagrees, if there are others, and as John said, should we actually have the debate before you bring it back as to whether or not we do want to say that and we think it is conclusive the way it's written at the moment, whether or not we agree that it's the right way.
As I recall, we had that discussion a couple of meetings back, and Alan Teixeira, who was the project manager, said he never thought it was conclusive. That's my recollection of what Alan told us, that his recollection was that it was always indicative rather than conclusive. And my understanding of U.S. practice, Scott and Julie can correct me, is that U.S. practice tends to view it as conclusive in 99 and 44/100% of the situations.
I think U.S. practice is certainly that as long as the employment contingency is substantive,
yeah,
this is conclusive. A three-day employment contingency is not going to get that answer, but a substantive employment contingency, that is the practice.
Julie?
Similar reaction. I think historically the reason U.S. GAAP was indicative was not because you really thought if the person really had to work or didn't have to work, you know, it was comp, but it was indicativeness left the door open to force you to analyze the substance of what was going on, make sure you really understood it, and account for the, you know, ones that had form but no substance the right way. It wasn't, indicativeness wasn't because it could always be all over the map, the answer. It was just to force you to do the thinking, as opposed to just rely on, oh, it's black and white, I don't have to think, and then people structure around that. So I don't think, even though it was indicative, there really wasn't diversity in practice when, you know, the substance was there.
Philippe?
Well, going back to the paper, it seems to me the staff is focusing on this little word is, and you have underlined, is remuneration for, and you say that's conclusive. But if I start from the first line of this paragraph, A, little A, which says the terms of continuing employment by the selling shareholders who become key employees may be an indicator. And that, the heading of that paragraph leads me to think it's indicative. And then we have the second sentence which says is. That is conclusive. So there is some contradiction, I think, in the structure of the paragraph, and I'm not sure we can say that overall the paragraph leads you to conclude it is conclusive. It leads me to conclude the paragraph is a bit strange because it has two different directions, indicative then conclusive. So maybe this is why Alan Teixeira said he never meant it to be conclusive, but I think it's a bit difficult to interpret the overall direction that this paragraph leads you to. I think it leads me to say sometimes it's an arrangement for remuneration for work, sometimes it is contingent consideration, and not easy to say.
John?
I mean, I wasn't on the committee when Alan made the comment, so I can't comment on whether he said that was the intention, but that's not actually what the words say. The words say is, and the vast majority of people interpret that as being conclusive, that if it is linked, then it is actually remuneration. So I'm quite concerned if we issue something that actually creates a lot more diversity. There is some diversity at present, but that creates a lot more diversity than there is today across the globe, because most people are interpreting that as meaning that if it is, that is effectively a rule in the standard. So I would be a bit concerned by something that opened up the door to more diversity in practice on this issue.
Andrew, and then we'll come back to staff.
Well, I agree that the language is less than helpful, but I mean, but I totally agree with what John has just said in terms of blowing up diversity. I mean, you've got a list of indicators in that paragraph, and one, it says, is determinative. You know, if you hit that indicator, that's it. The rest is judgment.
Yes. In summary, our proposal is to clarify this paragraph in any way, and we are proposing to wait to clarify this paragraph together with the FASB. This is our proposal. We would avoid to clarify now that the current wording is indicative, because I think there is no consensus. This is our proposal.
Well, that's fine, but you just, that will open the door to massive diversity on what is a huge, huge issue.
Yes.
Scott?
I think the question is, are we waiting for post-implementation reviews to decide how to clarify, or are we waiting for post-implementation reviews in order to decide whether to change? I mean, I think that's the issue. If the post-implementation review comes to the conclusion that it ought not be conclusive, well, then we will change the words. The question is whether that change in the words will be clarifying what it was always supposed to be, or whether it will be changing the guidance. And I think what we're debating right now is whether our agenda decision now that says we're going to wait until the post-implementation reviews, which I think is clearly the consensus, that we ought to wait to do anything. The question is whether that agenda decision is going to say, currently it's conclusive, or whether the agenda decision is going to say, currently we don't know what the heck it says, or whether the agenda decision is going to try to skate by that issue so as to not tip our hand one way or the other and try to let practice stay exactly as it was. I mean, I think I hear John and Andrew suggesting that we ought not do anything that encourages diversity. And I think Laurence is saying we ought not do anything that cuts off diversity that already exists. I can understand both of those, because if there is real diversity right now in reading that, I understand that we don't want to tell one group they're wrong necessarily if we see merit in that. So I'm not sure what to do with the agenda decision.
I was with you till that last sentence. Go ahead, Laurence.
I'm not encouraging diversity, as you indicate. I'm asking people to take their responsibilities and to exercise proper judgment after proper analysis of the situations. In many cases, I would likely conclude that it is remunerations. But there are very few cases where indeed concluding that it is remuneration would give a wrong picture of the transactions, particularly when this leads to huge amounts of negative goodwills to be recognized at the time of the transaction, and then you have subsequent expenditure. And I do believe that if you say it is conclusive, then you close the door to reflecting properly the economy of the transactions on those rare cases I'm just mentioning. So I'm just asking people to take their responsibilities, exercise their judgment properly, beat off, because it's easy to have a rule, conclusive, okay, easy, you have no more discussions anyway, every time you have such a situation.
But it's what the words that she's saying.
So, as Philippe mentioned it, and as others mentioned it, as Alan explained to us, the words are not so clear. So I do believe that there is room here for addressing situations properly, reflecting transactions properly, but effectively we have to be tough when we are convinced that this is remuneration. And I have no problem with that. And I can tell you in my own shop, usually, as I said, mainly remuneration, but I want to leave the door open to those rare cases why effectively remuneration does not portray the right thing in the transaction.
Okay.
Step one, we need a new agenda decision for tomorrow. And step two, the drafting of that, I take the point, should not encourage the development of new diversity that does not already exist. Step three, I liked Julie's analysis, and I don't personally see a lot of daylight between Julie's analysis and Lawrence's analysis, except in the way they expressed it, or even Scott's. Because if we really said it was determinative, then it would be absolutely form-driven, and you've said it even there, it's not. You'd say there are things that are not substantive. So I would like to ask Julie if she would be willing to help the staff.
And
if you can remember what it was you said, and I find at my age that's somehow difficult anymore, but maybe you being younger and sharper would be able to. Julie?
I remember it well because I was on the FASB staff when this issue came up in USCAP and I worked on it. So, I'll make a go at it.
The other thing that I would ask us to reflect on, and Michael, you may be able to clarify this. Of all of the things that would be on somebody's hit parade for the post-issuance review of IFRS 3, I got to believe this is going to be way down the list.
I'd agree with that. There's much more bigger issues that people face with business combinations accounting.
And I'm not certain that had we not gotten into it, it would have even occurred to anybody except maybe the geeks in the national offices. But Scott?
Well, not in the national office, but I have to. Absolutely. So I don't know if I'm supposed to be offended or not. If the conclusion of the post-implementation review is that this just isn't all that important, well, I think that's fine. Then we would just move on and not bother changing anything. I mean, it doesn't trouble me if what happens in the post-implementation review is that they decide, you know, there's 27 important issues and this isn't one of them. Then I think we would just leave it alone and let practice continue to deal with it as practice has.
I certainly wasn't intending to insult Scott by being a geek.
My wife uses it as an insult.
My point was that I'm not sure that the threshold for the post-issuance review is the same threshold that we would use in addressing an issue here. And they may produce an additional shopping list for us, but I was speculating that this wouldn't necessarily make their cut. But John, Michael,
first. Post-implementation review, you know, I would expect any post-implementation review to identify potentially major issues which would need to be dealt with by the board in a sort of a board-level project for revisions or amendments to a standard if such issues arose. But in addition, there could be smaller issues such as this one, which could be identified through the post-implementation review, which, if there weren't the major issues, would simply be referred to this committee for dealing with.
Julie, and then we'll put a wrapper on it. John, would you? You're through?
Yeah. No, I mean, I just wanted to say, not wanting to sound defensive, as I'm clearly in the geek category you refer to, but I mean, this
is a job requirement.
But this is a big issue. This is a big issue in practice. I mean, there is a significant number of business combinations where there is contingent consideration tied to future employment, and it is a matter of always some heat and some debate, the accounting in IFRS 3. So I wouldn't underestimate the importance of this in any post-implementation review.
Julie, and then I think we've got our marching orders.
It's just a maybe strategic point. I mean, in this case, you know, you're saying they got the post-implementation review, so let's not deal with it. But as a regulator, I'd hate to see that as a precedent. You know, every time an issue comes up, where there's going to be a post-invitation review, it's, you know, we can't or we shouldn't touch it. I mean, if this one, it's okay because of other factors, it's okay to wait, so be it. But otherwise, we're hampering, you know, activity here. I mean, there could be something that really needs to be solved. And so, and if, even if there's a post-implementation review, and maybe that would change it, but so be it. You know, if something needs to be dealt with in the meantime, I would hate to, every time there's a post-implementation review, the committee think, well, we shouldn't work on it. So.
I don't think anybody would disagree with you on that. Cash?
Just a clarification, a question. The post-implementation review for IFRS 3 and ASB 141, is that, I heard it's not coordinated together. It's just U.S. go first or just synchronize? Or how long you think we should wait?
Yes.
So you way down, as we mentioned, but I got the impression that it could be FASB might be a little bit earlier.
You're right. FASB have already started their review of the US GAAP Business Combinations guidance. We have not started ours yet. We are conducting them differently in that ours is part of the standard setting process and involving public consultation and public meetings, whereas the FASB process is actually not a FASB process, it's the FAF process. And is more of an oversight process and is done not in the same public way as we do ours. So they're quite different in that regard, even though we're obviously looking at the implementation of the same standard. So that's where the differences are. And ours, it's not scheduled to start until quarter one next year.
So you're not saying to wait until IFRS 3 post-implementation, but
no.
US.
Well, That is correct, because we don't see that, as consistent with what Julie was suggesting, we don't see the post-implementation review, our post-implementation review, as being a basis for us not doing work in this committee if work needs to be done.
All right. Well, we will put time on the agenda tomorrow for the revised agenda decision. But the basic point is we're going to wait for the completion of the FASB's post-issuance review, because absent our desire to stay with an identical standard, we would move ahead. Correct. But since they want to wait, we're kind of constrained to wait as well.
Indeed.
Okay. All right. Well, next up, John. Yeah.